Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this non-stop flight-free podcast service. Our flight time will be roughly 20 minutes. Please make sure your seat backs and tray tables are in their full upright position and that your seat belt is correctly fastened. But no need to set your mobile devices to airplane mode, that can stay off. We've been cleared to take off, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this flight-free podcast.
Joining us this month is Steve Westlake, and we'll be exploring the idea of social influence and behaviour change. Do campaigns such as Flight Free UK work? And how? How are we influenced by those around us? Steve is doing a PhD at Cardiff University on leadership with relation to climate change. He focuses on behaviours that will reduce emissions and the social influence that has. For example, how leaders might encourage people to copy them to reduce their own carbon footprint. Let's hear from Steve about where his interest in this subject came from.
My name's Steve Westlake. I had a job on a cycling magazine. And prior to that, I'd been a freelance journalist, and prior to that, a magazine journalist. And I'd flown a lot for my job when I was on magazines and for holidays. But I'd always, in the background, I'd always had this awareness of climate change and environmental issues, but it hadn't really impacted my behaviour. And part of the reason was because the social norms, what everybody does is everybody flies around. So that was kind of part of my life. But then I started doing a master's degree while I was working into climate change and really got studying the science and the position we're in, which obviously anyone who starts to look at it, where you have this real, wow, it's really bad. It's really, really urgent. And I found that having come to that realization and being presented with these stark figures, it was just clear to me that I couldn't have the concern that I had and be reading these figures and then say, well, actually, it's okay for me to get on a plane for anything other than an emergency, especially because I'd flown a lot already. So I felt it wasn't that I was missing out, which I totally understand some people feeling. But for me, who I had traveled a lot, I just thought, it's just the right thing to do.
Social norms are really important here. Steve never really questioned his flights because he was doing what everyone around him was doing. This is very typical of the human race. We tend to behave like those around us and not to question this behaviour. So, where does this come from? Why and how are we influenced by others?
Yeah, there's lots of evidence that suggests we are highly influenced by people like us or people who we identify with. And that probably stems from our time in small hunter-gatherer bands where, you know, the village scenario or the small group. And that's definitely part of our makeup, is this affinity with some people and kind of disaffinity with others. If it's a close friend or a family member or a colleague who you like, then yeah, it's likely to have more of an influence. This idea of social influence cuts across psychology, anthropology, sociology, political science. And, you know, one of the reasons humans have flourished and are so successful and dominant on the planet is our social ability and the way we can learn from each other. So, you know, most of what we learn comes from other people. And then also we're highly influenced by our social group. So if we identify people, we copy them. I did a survey to find people who knew somebody who'd given up flying. So probably the people who answered that survey were more likely to be environmentally conscious. But however, there were still some very, well, there were lots of people who flew a lot in that survey, you know, more than 10 return flights a year. And about 75% of the people who said they knew somebody who'd given up flying said their attitudes have changed. And more than half said they fly less as a result of that. One person who I spoke to, I interviewed some people as well as the survey, and one person, it was their boss who'd stopped flying, quite a well-known theatre director called Katie Mitchell. And it was one of her colleagues, her junior colleagues, who really admired this person and was just very impressed that she was willing to put herself out and potentially damage her career, as she saw it, because by choosing not to fly because it's so important. So that in that case, it was there was some level of not so much hierarchy, but seniority and admiration. And so, yeah, if it's a high profile person or somebody you really admire for whatever reason, then the influence is more, as you might expect.
One of the benefits of being so attuned to each other's behaviour is that change can happen fast. If enough of us start acting in a certain way, it will begin to shift the norm. This is important to remember when we're feeling like our individual actions don't make a difference. So let's ask Steve, why is it important that we make low carbon choices as individuals?
One reason is because it's the right thing to do. If you're really concerned about climate change, then it feels quite a natural process to say, this is such a serious issue. It's affecting people now. People are dying now. It's going to affect future generations. There's a real global north, global south equity issue. It's just the right thing to do. So that's on an individual basis to try and reduce our emissions as much as practically possible now. Then really wrapped up in that is the social influence element, which I'm really interested in. If you do something, then other people see you doing it, your friends, your family, your colleagues. There is a communicative effect from what we do. We are social creatures. Huge amount of research and evidence shows that we look to reference people and see what they're doing, and we compare what they're doing to what we're doing, and we work out what we should be doing from that. So it goes beyond just an individual choice to cut one's own carbon footprint by X kilograms or tons of CO2. It's also part of the social mix, and that feeds into politics as well. So really, the personal is the political. And that's where I think the debate is really limited at the moment, because you'll see quite a lot of even climate scientists, most of them kind of atmospheric scientists, saying, oh, you shouldn't worry about individual emissions because they add up to nothing. You know, each person's emissions don't really count. So focus on the systems change, which is very important, but actually personal change feeds into systems change. What they tend to ignore and not say is this social influence and this idea that the policies that we need, so the systems change, which they argue for, is all wrapped up in what people are prepared to do, public attitudes, social norms, and that is highly dependent on what we do and what we talk about. If enough people are changing their behaviour, the political side of it becomes possible. And you go, well, look, there's a campaign, there's Flight Free 2020, there's X thousand people who've stopped flying, there's opinion polls that say 60% of people would reduce this activity or that activity. And that is what feeds into the systems change, which everybody agrees needs to happen.
There's an article about this on our website called Individual versus System Change, which explores how these two things are deeply intertwined. Individual change can influence system change, and system change is needed to bring about mass individual change. You really can't have one without the other, and we definitely need both. You can read that article at flightfree.co.uk on the Be Inspired tab. Something that relates to this is nudge theory. Steve's not a fan. We ask him, what do you mean by nudge is not enough?
Well, nudge is a theory of social change which has become very popular in the last 10 or 15 years. You've probably heard of the nudge unit. It got quite a lot of coverage at the beginning of the COVID crisis because the story goes that it was feeding into government thinking quite a lot. A nudge is a theory of changing behaviour where you're kind of letting people make the decisions you want to make by making it easier for them to do that. And they call it changing the choice architecture. So it's things like having opt-out options, say for giving blood or donation of organs, instead of people having to opt in before something happens, you have to opt out, and then lots more people make the choice you want them to make. So nudge has become really popular in government circles because it fits with a certain political ideology of freedom of choice and individual freedoms. However, nudge doesn't change the reason people are making decisions. So it doesn't change the values or the attitudes that underlie the decisions. And bearing in mind the big changes that need to happen, those values do need to change. So we need something more than nudge. You know, we need big social shifts, something more like a shove, or at least a pull. We need everybody to have a more urgency than nudge.
Now, there are lots of reasons why people can't make low carbon choices. Mainly to do with cost. Some people simply can't access train travel as an alternative to flying because it's more expensive. And while many of us are in the position to make that change, it's not open to everyone, and it's not fair to ask everyone to make these decisions when it would mean hardship for that person. So this is where we need government input, isn't it?
Yes, it is up to the government, and this has been referred to as the governance trap. In fact, by one of my PhD supervisors, I think he came up with it, Professor Nick Pidgeon. He's led lots of research into what the public think and what the governments do. And basically, the public think, yes, I want to tackle climate change, but the government needs to do stuff to make that happen. And the government says, well, we've got a free society, the markets will sort things out. So if consumers choose it, then that's fine. They can make market decisions. And so there's this trap where both allocate responsibility to each other. So the government does need to do stuff, and it's not doing enough. And the problem is political ideology, this idea of the free market will fix everything, and fossil fuel lobbying and corporate lobbying, which tries to maintain the status quo and continue increased profits, etc. So there's huge problems with government, which is why the Citizens Assembly is hopefully a really good thing, because it will provide more community and grassroots, as it were, input into government decision making, hopefully. But what we can do, if we're able, is to put pressure on government by showing that this is what citizens want, and that it's possible, and that we will make sacrifices, if you want to call them sacrifices, because of climate change, because it's so important. There's this narrative that, oh, nobody wants to make sacrifices and that we're all selfish, but it's really not realistic. And we've seen it with COVID. People are prepared to make sacrifices, and some really, really hard sacrifices, for the social good, for the good of everybody. We will do it. It's part of our sort of social cultural evolution. We make sacrifices on small and large scales all the time, and people will do it. But part of the narrative against behaviour change when it comes to climate change is that people won't make sacrifices. And that's something I'm interested in exploring a bit more, because I think people will if it's perceived as fair and just. We don't want to be taken for a ride over and over again, but people will give things up for the good of their community, for the good of their country even.
So, coming on to leadership. We've talked about how we're influenced by those close to us in our social circle, but why do we need those with a high profile to step up? Even if we don't agree with their politics, can we still be influenced by them? Why is leadership so important here?
It seems we're quite a long way from the social tipping point where actually people start to prioritise environmental sustainability and climate change in what they do. But part of that, and this is why I'm particularly interested in leadership, part of that is leadership. It's the social signals we send each other. And at the moment, I think our leaders are not sending strong social signals that this is really important and we're doing it. People are busy, people get on with their everyday lives, they work really hard and they want their holiday or they want to do the thing they've dreamed of. And that's totally understandable. And this is where I think we need leadership to say, okay, well, we are going to literally lead in this direction, and the direction is lower emissions. And we need to embody that literally with our bodies. So this is one of my hypotheses, that we need leaders to show what low carbon living will be like. As they say, actions speak louder than words. And so if we hear a politician saying climate change is really important, COP26, the UK is a leader on climate change, and then we see them taking a helicopter to Glasgow, we look at that and go, but that's what you're actually doing. And there's this mismatch between behaviour and words. And we're highly attuned to that, those discrepancies.
And finally, will we see a shift away from flying anytime soon?
There is some evidence, for instance, that Greta Thunberg has triggered or helped to trigger this flight awareness. Some people call it flight shame, but really it's flight consciousness or flight awareness. And bookings in certain countries have reduced. I don't think it's by a huge amount, but I can totally see it happening, yes. But it will require the narratives and the discussions to continue to be strongly present in the media. And most of the media is part of the problem, to be honest. So, for instance, BBC, the business slot, will do stories about fossil fuels. They'll do stories about the airline industry. They'll do stories about transport, car transport. And even if it comes directly after a piece on climate change, they won't mention emissions in the business slot, because the business is nothing to do with climate change, and clearly business is everything to do with climate change, and they won't make those connections. To answer your question, I think it's possible, but it really requires persistent counter messaging from things like Flight Free, from NGOs. There's scientific literature on social tipping points and where they might come from, and social norms is one of those. If discussions around the morality of climate change can be increased, then people will feel more and more self-aware of the fact that if you get on several flights a year, you are contributing to guaranteeing global warming, which will kill loads of people. Now, that it's a hard thing to hear if you're not on that page yet, but that's the fact. You are contributing to that. People at the moment prefer to look away, but that can change. And the alternatives aren't necessarily terrible sacrifices. You know, these are first world problems, aren't they? We're not confronted with the same thing that people in low-lying nations or Bangladesh or, you know, nations which are getting uninhabitable because of heat waves. Our problems are really pretty small compared to theirs.
It's a really hard truth, but hopefully it's a rallying cry. It's urgent that we take climate action, and we've seen that our individual choices have much more impact than simply reducing our own carbon footprint. We don't need to be famous or have loads of followers on Twitter, but we can all have an impact in our own way. Our campaign is designed to inspire that social shift, to create a visible community of people who are willing to take action on the climate and allow that conversation to be had. Thanks so much to Steve and to you for joining us this month, and we hope you're reassured that your individual action does make a huge and vital difference.
Ladies and gentlemen, the seatbelt sign indicates we're coming to the end of our journey. Don't forget to take your duty-free items with you. We have some excellent tweets and inspiring Instagram posts at FlightFree2020. Or how about our Facebook page, Flight Free UK, and our website is always available, www.flightfree.co.uk. We've been cleared to land, so on behalf of the Flight Free podcast service, I'd like to thank you for joining us, and we look forward to welcoming you on board again next month.